Kudos to Ray Graff. You know, pandemic aside, looks to be a beautiful day. Welcome to the program. It does look to be a beautiful day, and we'll try to make it the best that we can make it together. And I think being together and being kind and talking about things and talking it through is all good. And we thank you for being with us as we work on that exercise this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you, then we will go over our, let me start with the rules, actually. Unfortunately, I hate to call them rules, but they're just suggestions, really. We have enough rules right now telling us operating our life of what we can and what we cannot do. But please, if you're writing to the program, we just ask a couple quick things from you. One is that you keep your letters short, you keep them to the point. We ask that you don't include links or attachments. The reason for all of this, and there are more rules, but let me just preface it by saying this. We have seen an explosion in the amount of letters. Now that you're all home, you're writing more and more and more, and we love it. It's really great. Obviously, we can't get to every letter. Please do not take it personally if we don't read your letter. It's not because we dislike you. We don't even know, probably, we're not making the connection as to who is writing it. We're just looking at the letter for what it is and where it goes in the grand scheme of things. And we're going as fast as we can. Sarah LeDuc is monitoring this. Then it comes to me and I monitor it. And it's just we're doing the best we can. So keep them short. Keep them to the point. We can get to as many as possible. Also, just watch out for reading and just proofread your letter, because we're reading them on the fly, and then we want to make sure that we actually get the point across that you wanted to get across. I had a listener yesterday write to me and very upset that I had mangled and misinterpreted her letter, but it was missing three verbs. So I don't know. We did the best we could. So with those rules in announced and in play, we go to introducing our wonderful panel, and then we remind you that you can join us at panel@wamc.org. We do love your letters. They're a very important part of the point of the program. We just want to make sure that we can get to as many as possible and that there are something interesting for our listeners to hear. WAMC's Alan Chartok is in the house. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm in the house. I've got my coffee. I'm a happy man, relatively, although I've never been known for being all that happy. Yeah, right.
A certain skip in the step kind of guy, I think.
Yeah, of course.
Happy
of course.
About life and all that. Well, good morning. Senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator, our dear friend Judith Enk is here. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to hear your smiling face.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program as always. We have a lot to talk about, and we look forward to what you have to say on a great deal of issues. So it's thank you for being with us and spending time with us. We also want to welcome Siena College economics professor Aaron Pasitti. Aaron, unfortunately, we had some technical problems last week. We think we figured those out. And now Aaron joins us. And our goal, Aaron, is to keep you on for the full show.
Good. Well, technical difficulties, missing verbs, pandemic and economic collapse aside, it's good to be here.
It's going to be a beautiful day. Yes. Well, thank you very much. She was with us just about a month ago, and we've been begging her to come back, and her schedule now allows, and we're thrilled. Artistic director and CEO of the Berkshire Theater Group, Kate McGuire, is here. Good morning, Kate. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing the best I can. And Alan and Joe, you know me well. And actually, I usually am the happiest person in the room, grinning from ear to ear. But these are difficult and challenging times, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are. And without, I guess we'll just jump into it, though. But for you, I would think, look, all businesses, everything has been affected. But look, you're trying to put a season together. You're trying to plan for the spring, the summer, even the fall. You have programming. You have to get actors here. You have to find housing. You have to do all of this stuff. And I assume, like the great plane in the sky, you are in a holding pattern.
We are in a holding pattern. We're trying to put a season together that accounts for the unknown, if you will, and trying to sort through what's going on in the world in almost an impossible time. So for those of us that like having control, there is nothing in our control.
God, does that piss you off, right?
Yes, it's complicated.
You know, and then also, and this is to both Kate and to Alan, you know, and really to the whole panel, but this is, look, this is affecting all of us, but what we're hearing now from, this is going to be a circuitous way of getting around to this question, but last night at the press briefing, the president was talking about this, still sticking with Easter as being a date that he could get back people, and stepping back a little bit and saying it was going to be certain areas and there were areas that would be affected. One of the concerns is, of course, is that if you do a ranking system and you say an area is relatively COVID-free, then everyone's going to go there. And what we're seeing in the Berkshires, what we're seeing in the Hudson Valley, what we're seeing in upstate New York and the Adirondacks and other places, even in my little county, the people from New York and other places, Boston, are trying to leave the epicenter, if you will, especially New York, leave the epicenter and come to some place where the disease is less prevalent. So I'm wondering what impact that has, especially for you, Kate, on the Berkshires and what's going on as you try to go about whatever your normal day is at this point.
Well, someone did just mention to me, oh, my God, all these people are coming from New York and filling the Berkshires. Well, they are. They're homes here. I have several board members that actually live in New York that like to think of the Berkshires as their first home because it's their favorite. And so, and my own son, who's in New York right now, would certainly like to get out of New York and get here as quickly as possible. I think New York is a war zone,
right,
if you will.
Yeah.
So it's hard to blame anyone for wanting to get out of there.
You know, and I should have been more clear. Certainly, there are people who are homeowners and have homes here. And one of the problems, though, that we're finding is that people with Airbnb and other sources, people are coming and looking for places that normally would not have come here, which is causing some municipalities to put out edicts saying, please do not. Take your listing off Airbnb because we don't mm-hmm. need more people, especially from the city coming in. We can't take care of what we have right now.
Right.
Alan, are you seeing that in your area of the Berkshires as well?
I like to ask this question. What would I do if I was living in New York and I could protect myself, protect my loved one, go up to the Berkshires and self-quarantine? I have a neighbor who's done exactly that. Self-quarantine for a couple of weeks. I would think it is the, you know, what I worry about here, Joe and Kate and everybody else, is that we're living in strenuous times when people are getting angry. And you
yeah.
hear it, you see it in the letters, you see it in the gun sales where people are buying guns, even more guns than they have. You have people who are confined to their homes. You have people who fight with each other. And if you've got a gun in the house, instead of yelling at each other, somebody takes a gun. The police are always going to break up domestic fights and things. So it's what I worry about is the amount of pressure that is on all of us. And this kind of thing where people say, keep those New Yorkers out of our area, I think it's misplaced and I think it's just wrong. I hate it. My job has always been to make it a little bit more comfortable for those people, not less.
I
agree with you, Alan. Yep.
I want to just quickly go over some of the headlines today and then we'll open this up. And start taking, talking about what is going on. First of all, we should note that this story just breaking in the last hour or so that we've learned that Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the UK, has coronavirus. And that is, obviously, he just spoke two or three days ago talking about a 21-day lockdown of that country. And is now saying that he has COVID-19. Also, other headlines, the House is set to vote on a relief deal, a $2 trillion economic stabilization package in response to the coronavirus pandemic. It was almost unanimously approved by the Senate and is expected to pass in the House today. We'll talk to Aaron about that in just a few minutes. President Trump said he planned to label different areas. This is what I was referring to earlier. Different areas as high risk, medium risk, or low risk as part of guidelines to help states determine quarantine and distancing measures. He also reiterated his desire to start opening up parts of the country soon. A White House deal with the private sector for 80,000 ventilators was up in the air as the government considered the $1 billion price tag. The Environmental Protection Agency relaxed pollution rules, allowing power plants, factories, and other facilities to monitor themselves for an undetermined period.
That was Judith.
Well, Judith, and it wasn't only about that. It's about the fact that in Great Barrington, I believe, I don't want to give out misinformation, they're saying don't bring your dirty old bags to get your groceries. And there's a move on for plastics again.
Yeah, a big article in the Times about that yesterday, too. We'll get to those. I promise, Judith, we'll get to those subjects as well. Also, we should mention to you the, of course, there was the Labor Department news yesterday. But look, the big headline, and I think it's the most important headline and the one that should make us all just very, very scared is the amount of people who have died. We are now we lead the world in confirmed cases, and we have the highest number of confirmed cases. States are pleading for supplies as cases spike outside of New York City. So as we talk about a lot of this other stuff, we should not lose sight of the fact that indeed people are dying, and we have the highest number of cases in the world. So that is something to keep in mind as well as we have our conversation this morning. Aaron, let me begin with you, if you can, in the as brief as possible, but in your very good manner of telling us and making this make sense to us, of the House is voting on the stimulus. What do you think on the stimulus package? What do you make of this piece of legislation, and how ultimately do you think it could affect the economy?
Okay. So it's very clear right now that the bottom has fallen out of the global economy and the U.S. economy. So there's almost no doubt that the global economy, including the U.S., has entered a recession of unprecedented size. Depending on how you look at it, this could very well result in a second Great Depression. So that said, what the Federal Reserve, I'll get to the stimulus in a second, but what the Federal Reserve is doing, which I think is extremely important, is for the first time in their history, the Federal Reserve normally just lends to a select number of critically important banks. Now the Federal Reserve has opened up their teller window to not only these important banks, but also all banks and also commercial businesses. So the Fed's gone from a central bank to becoming a commercial bank, and they've pledged unlimited support. And I think that's a major part that needs to be discussed within the context of the stimulus bill that Congress is likely to pass. So the $2 trillion stimulus bill primarily includes income support for households and also a lifeline to businesses who have been affected. So my brief take on it is there's three channels that policymakers need to look at: income support to households, keeping businesses open through these economic times, and a financial backstop. So the Fed is taking care of the financial backstop. So what the congressional stimulus needs to do is provide income support to households and income support to businesses. Income support to households is important because people are probably going to be out of a job for a very, very long time. So independent of the fact that the number of unemployed workers rose from 280,000 to 3.3 million over the past week, you have to factor in the duration. So as of now, the stimulus bill provides income support to unemployed workers or even workers who have a job, and might have seen their hours cut. It's not enough. This is going to go on for months and months, if not years. So way too timid in terms of the amount and duration of income support. I was happy to see Nancy Pelosi say that this is something that Congress will be revisiting on a regular basis. So that's good news to kind of soften the initial blow. But if we're going to prevent a second Great Depression, those numbers are going to have to go up, and they're going to have to go up for months, if not years. The second part of that is keeping businesses open. The reason it's important to keep businesses open during this time is that, you know, most small businesses can't sustain 3 months without adequate revenue. So if these businesses disappear during the recession, there's not going to be jobs for those workers once the economy recovers. So you need to essentially keep businesses open and keep them primed so that when the economy does recover, when people are more comfortable venturing out and going to restaurants and going to see movies and concerts, that those businesses exist. And as of now, it looks like the stimulus bill, which is also in working in conjunction with the Federal Reserve, is providing almost an unlimited lifeline to affected businesses.
I'm giving you a 1 minute warning before we have to go to a break. Go ahead.
Okay. So that's the nutshell of it. People need to fasten their seatbelts. This 3.3 million new unemployed workers this week is just the tip of the iceberg. At the peak of the financial crisis in 2008, when economists thought the sky was collapsing, at most, the economy lost 800,000 jobs in 1 month, and we are losing 3.3 million over the span of a week. That number is going to go up with what's happening in New Orleans, how this pandemic is spreading to other areas outside of New York City, Seattle, and San Francisco. So we're probably looking at the March unemployment report, which comes out in next Friday, won't have the coronavirus impact in it. Expect 10% unemployment in April, expect 20% in May, and expect a decrease in GDP approximating 20 to 25%. Congress needs to do more now.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much for that. We're going to take a break. We'll let that sink in for a moment. We'll come in, and I know our panel probably has questions for Aaron. I know I do. And we welcome your points as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Judith Eng, Kate McGuire, and Aaron Pasitti. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Aaron, let me just ask you one question, and then we'll go to the rest of the panel, too. I have a question about the stock market and just not understanding. Mm-hmm. One of the things when the last 2 days have been very high for the stock market, obviously, records being set and regaining a lot of the ground that was lost over the previous 10 days or so. Even as the jobless claims just soared, the Dow was still up 1,300 points. We should note that right now at a bond opening, just about 4 minutes ago, it is down 847 points. So we'll keep that in mind. But one of the things that struck me is the president said this, and Wall Street experts also were saying this, that it was not only the stimulus package that caused it to go up, but it was also the president's assurance that we would be reopening by Easter. And my question is, does Wall Street, I'll say this as delicately as I can, does Wall Street really mm-hmm. believe him anymore?
No. I don't know. I think, during the week that it was St. Patrick's Day week, when this all started, you would see Wall Street and stock indices tumble whenever Trump had a press conference. So, yeah, this has been the strongest 3 days in stock growth since 1933. The S&P is up 17%. The Dow is up 21%. What I think is happening is that despite the rapid rise in unemployment insurance claims, the passage of the stimulus bill is very reassuring, both in terms of the fundamentals of how it's going to help the economy essentially get through the next month. That's pretty much how you should be looking at this stimulus bill, as a Band-Aid. So the stock market responded positively to that. What I think really happened was that the stock market overshot in the other direction, in the downward direction, when this was breaking out, when you saw the lack of congressional action. And now that Congress has acted, you're seeing an equally overly optimistic growth spurt. So I would not pay, I would warn people not to pay too much attention to movements in stock indices as a barometer for the health and prospects of the economy. Stock prices are very volatile. They reflect nothing more than investor psychology's forecast of expected corporate earnings. So this 3-day bump is probably just a small correction of the downward correction that happened prior to that.
All right.
Aaron, I am so pleased that you're with us. You disappear every once in a while, and when you, and when you're not here, we all feel the effects. I, as a person who was born a long, long time ago, 1941, remember the effects of the Great Depression. So when you say the word depression, I'm fascinated. I mean, because I don't think young people or people in their middle age really do have the connection to it that, for example, my family did. So I'm wondering what you see as a move towards depression and what we do if we get there.
Sure. Well, I think it's important to that's an excellent question. Economists have a technical term for depression, just like they have a technical term for recession. I think if we do get to depression level increases in unemployment and decreases in output and incomes, that the modern depression will look very different than the depression from 1929 to 1933. The Great Depression, there were no social safety nets. Unemployment insurance didn't exist. Nutrition assistance didn't exist. Medicaid, Medicare didn't exist. So it's going to look qualitatively different from the struggles people experienced during the first Great Depression. So if we do have a depression, what it will look like would just be mass unemployment. Again, 20-25%. You would probably see decreases in economic output, 10-25%, perhaps every quarter or every year. But the good news is that there are safety net programs in place. And the good news about the stimulus bill is that a very polarized Congress was able to essentially agree that we just need a massive bump in unemployment insurance payments. We need direct cash injections into households. That would have been unthinkable if this was a normal recession. So the fact that Congress is willing to essentially put aside, self-imposed partisan differences, the stimulus bill is going to cushion the blow. But like I said, probably for only a month or two before things get dramatically worse.
So when we
and
see,
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is that, like Alan pointed out, if you talk to people, your grandparents, your great grandparents who lived through the Depression, you'll notice that their behavior and psychology changed. They tend to be very thrifty. They tend to not waste food. My concern with what's happening now is that you might see a similar psychological and behavioral change about how people feel about venturing into public spaces where there's larger groups of crowds. Obviously, that's happening now by force. But even after this is lifted, are people going to be able to shed that psychology 5 years from now and go to a concert with the same mindset that they went to a concert with in 2019?
Or a theater, right, Kate?
Or a theater.
Well,
yes, I'm sorry.
I think this is going to reach into our bones. And it's true. When I my mother lived with us for a long time and constantly expressed her fears, you know, why was I buying so much food? Did I have enough canned goods in the basement? Questions that only came from that era and never left her body or her soul. And so, you know, one of the things I miss the most is just hugging. I spoke to a friend in Guido's the other day, 6 feet apart, and it was sad, actually, not to be able to move towards that person. This is going to have an impact on all of us, I think. I do think we will get back to the theater because the theater has been around since the Greeks. So I have faith in that and in rituals where we go to for healing. But our bodies and our souls are going to feel differently, I think.
I want to go ahead.
You know, very quickly, you know, it's so interesting. I keep thinking about our wonderful friends at Tanglewood, who are such an important part of the Berkshires and SPAC, but the Tanglewood people have a massive lawn. And I'm wondering whether or not, you know, when you have all of that, you certainly can't be congregating in a hall in Boston, but you can, if done the right way, you could say, here's a place you could be separated. And come to hear this music. Kate, I don't know how you feel about this, but without Tanglewood in our area, we're done for. I mean, it's really...
Oh, I feel the same way. Absolutely. Yeah.
But you also have to worry, about getting the musicians there and getting that group together who will be in a confined space, right? So, I mean, there are other...
I wouldn't want to be them.
Right. That's what I mean. Sure. You know, you have to think of the, right, Kate? You have to think of the audience and you have to think of your performers and musicians and everybody else.
Yes. But we are going to get to the other side of this. I think we all know that. The question is when and how long. You know, I keep looking at the other countries and how long it's faring for them. So when do we think we can start to gather in a safe way? Absolutely, we're thinking about that in terms of our audiences. And you're right, Alan. Tanglewood is the center of our cultural destination.
All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. Judith, we'll put you on the spot, and we'll talk about some of the environmental issues. We have some letters on that as well. We will take a break. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Ng, Kate McGuire, Aaron Pasitti. I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be right back. 44 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Friday morning. A reminder that the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, will be speaking and will be giving an update from the Javits Center in Manhattan. We'll be going to that live as soon as it happens, somewhere around 11:30. By the way, if you missed Alan's excellent interview with Governor Cuomo yesterday at 2:30, it is online at WAMC.org. It was really terrific, Alan. Congratulations. A great half hour.
Well, don't congratulate me. What I found so interesting, Joe, was that he really wanted this little time that we had together, because I think, you know, his somehow he really needs the comfort of talking with people who know him and who are interested in him personally. You know, it's just great to hear each time what he says about the coronavirus. But this was a pretty intimate discussion, and I hope people will go and listen to it at WAMC.org.
It's really terrific. And again, we'll be bringing the governor's remarks coming up at 11:30 this morning from the Javits Center. And again, Alan's interview at WAMC.org. Okay, we got this letter from Jan or Jan. I can't tell. Wednesday, both Walmart and Dollar General, Judith, were using plastic bags. I questioned this and was told it is allowed again because of the virus. Is this the truth?
Well, the plastic bag makers sued the state of New York to try to get New York's law thrown out. And not because of coronavirus. New York agreed to not enforce the law until May 15th. So Walmart, unfortunately, shifted to thicker plastic bags, selling them for a nickel each. They publicly said last week that once the law will be enforced May 15th, that they would stop using those plastic bags. Across the country, the plastic bag industry is working overtime to try to get plastic bag bans either delayed or repealed altogether. I want to emphasize that there's no evidence that reusable bags spread the coronavirus. As I've been saying for a while on the show, I'm a coronavirus hawk, and if I thought reusable bags were even a modest risk, I would recommend that people stop using them. But there's no evidence to suggest that. I think a good middle ground here is what Trader Joe's is doing in many locations, because what we're hearing from the industry is your reusable bag may contain coronavirus, so don't use it anymore. Untrue. And secondly, they're saying that the supermarket workers may be at risk at the checkout. So a couple things. One is, if you have cloth reusable bags, wash them in the laundry machine with soap and water. If you have reusable plastic bags, you can hand wash them and then spritz them with Clorox or whatever you're using. Dilute it, please. And then when you go to the store, what Trader Joe's, I don't know if locally, but I've heard this report from around the country, Trader Joe's is allowing people to still bring their reusable bags as long as you pack the groceries yourself, which I think is a reasonable compromise here. But as the New York Times reported yesterday, the plastic bag, the plastic industry PR machine is out in full force. I might also add that in Governor Cuomo's budget proposal, he has a proposal to ban certain polystyrene foam products or styrofoam. The legislature needs to decide this next week when they do the budget. And the plastics lobby is also saying, oh, you can't do the polystyrene ban because of the coronavirus. And they conveniently leave out that the effective date for the polystyrene ban is 2022, which hopefully we will not be in pandemic crisis by 2022. So this is a moment where the plastics industry is exploiting legitimate public health concerns. And we need policymakers to make their decisions based on facts.
Anybody have any questions on that?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Let me just play devil's advocate with you for a moment, Judith. The fact of the matter is, we know that the virus can live on surfaces. We know that most people, or some people, will not wash their bags. Mm-hmm. They'll just
right.
go back with it. We know that you, of course, have done remarkable and incredible work on this whole issue. We don't want the whales to die and all, and we don't want the plastics in our waterways. Nevertheless, sometimes you have to establish priorities based on need, even though some of the people on the other side may not be that good. There's a question there somewhere.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. And quite honestly, if I thought reusable bags was even a modest risk, I would say stop using them.
But how would you know?
In other words, we know
the science, yeah. right? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
So here's how you know. There is science on how long the virus lasts on surfaces. Mm-hmm. And it lasts longer on plastic than it does on cardboard. We don't have data on how long it lasts on fabric. So I think this is not the most important issue around the coronavirus. Why I'm concerned that the plastics industry is moving so hard to get all plastic reduction laws eliminated or delayed is our policymakers need to focus on the real risks, like getting more ventilators to hospitals, not spending bandwidth debating reusable bags versus plastic bags. And you're right, not everyone will wash their reusable bags. I want to urge everyone to do that. So I think the compromise that Trader Joe's came up with is a good one. And then secondly, another option is if stores really don't want reusable bags there, then they should start providing, as Target does, paper bags that are made from recycled content and that are easy to recycle. Whereas the same problems that existed with plastic bags a month ago exist today. Less than 5% are recycled. They're made from fossil fuel and chemicals. And, you know, they are clogging our rivers and our oceans. So, you know, there are a couple middle grounds here. One is paper. One is pack your own groceries. But I honestly do not believe that blocking people from bringing reusable bags to the store makes us any safer.
I am going to keep you on the spot here, Judith, and because we have a ton of letters and I want to get to as many as possible. This one is from Brian, and it's directed to you, so we'll go to that, and then we'll move through all of the letters. We have a lot on the economy. So Brian says, I read a distressing article last night detailing the EPA's decision to suspend enforcement of environmental laws. We touched on this earlier in the headlines. This is a huge problem, one that should not be glazed over by the media. Please take a few moments to spread awareness of this disastrous move. If you can, please look deeper into this and prompt your powerful friends, i.e. Governor Cuomo, to take action on behalf of the people. Judith.
Yeah, this is absolutely stunning. I mean, I've braced myself for bad environmental policies coming out of the Trump administration, but I actually gasped when I read this New York Times article last night. So what the EPA has announced is that companies do not have to comply with federal environmental laws, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, etc., because of the coronavirus. That makes no sense. EPA says they're counting on companies to act responsibly. So this is pretty much a nationwide waiver of environmental rules. We will feel the effects quickly. By the way, the waiver is retroactive to March 13th. This is unprecedented. This is not warranted. This is not lawful. I've also been reminding people that it's worse than you imagine, because research shows that air pollution lowers our ability to fight infections, particularly if you're someone with asthma or a respiratory disease. High levels of ozone, for instance, in places like New York City and New Orleans, makes people's bodies less able to fight off the virus. And that includes all age groups, from babies to the elderly. This is what the polluters, I think, have been pushing, and the Trump administration has gone along. It is astonishing. Mm. I also think it's unlawful. I asked a congressional staffer last night to check, was there something in the stimulus bill that authorized this? You know, just a couple confusing sentences that the EPA could waive environmental laws during this crisis. And I was told no. So it needs to happen. And we are not powerless in this situation. What needs to happen is we all need to get on the phone and contact Attorney General in your state, Tish James in New York, Maura Healey in Massachusetts, et cetera, and tell them they need to race to federal court as soon as possible to get this new EPA policy rescinded. Now, the problem is you could win in court, but the EPA could still slow walk any kind of enforcement. But them putting this memo out makes no sense.
Lori writes and says, do you think there will be, we've been also hearing about the positives of this, the climate and environmental positives of us not moving around as much. And Lori asked, do you think there will be monitoring of the changes in carbon dioxide and other pollutants during these months? That would be so great. So that is one question. But then does this sort of counteract that?
Yeah, so China did some air monitoring and showed a dramatic reduction in air pollution when people were told to stay home and manufacturing facilities were shut down. I don't think that's a good clean air strategy, and I think those reductions are temporary. What I think is risky here is I don't think the Trump EPA is honest or competent. And I think that they probably are not ramping up air monitoring or water monitoring at this time. I hope academic institutions are doing that. And what you will see is while people are not commuting to work and you know, most of the businesses that are closed are not big air polluters. I think it's mostly from transportation you're going to see a reduction in air pollution. And it would be good to be able to chart the increase due to this. But it's not just air. I mean, we'll have more toxins in our water. We'll have more pesticide residue on our food. This is an across-the-board nationwide waiver. A relaxation on regulations. The businesses say that they need this because they're facing layoffs and there are personnel restrictions and other problems related to the coronavirus. I just don't know how that squares with not requiring companies to comply with environmental laws.
We're going to hold it there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a ton of letters, and I do mean a ton, so we'll get to them as quickly as we possibly can. We have a wonderful panel, and we thank you for your interest. Panel at WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Kate McGuire, Aaron Pacitti. We will be back after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. I spent the break color coding the letters that we have so we can put them in some sort of break. I've broken them out for Aaron and economic stories are in green. The environmental questions are in blue and general questions about the president's dealing are in orange. Aren't able to understand my code. Okay. Good morning. We are back. Let me go through these letters. We have a ton, and I do mean a ton. So we're going to go through. And for all of our panelists, you each have like 20 questions each. So if you can keep your answers as brief as possible, that would be awesome. We go to Aaron. This is a question for Aaron from Dave. Will the pandemic cause or be an excuse for price increases?
Probably in certain goods due to panic, whether it's, you know, toilet paper or paper towels. The more damaging long-term effects will be sustained price and income decreases.
Don't forget vodka.
Yeah, vodka. The yeah. An essential
alcohol
service.
Sales,
our liquor.
Marijuana
liquor.
Sales. All of these things will be going up in price because of the higher demand. But it's important to remember that this is affecting the entire economy. So when prices go down, people think that that's a good thing. But prices only tend to decrease economy-wide when incomes and hours are decreasing economy-wide as well.
Another question for Aaron, this one from Neil. If we are indeed headed toward a second Great Depression, what will the stock market look like then? Will the Dow collapse to 10,000 or less?
There is no better way to make a fool of yourself as an economist than to try to predict the future. So I have no idea. I can't imagine it would sink that low because before going into the coronavirus era, the economy was on very, very, very firm footing, all things considered. And I think the willingness and kind of implicit acknowledgement of Congress or by Congress of the scale of this will mean there will be future stimulus bills passed in the coming months. So I don't see the Dow dropping that far.
Bill says, I'm wondering if you have insight, Aaron, into how much of the stock market's wild swings are the result of automatic or so-called artificial intelligence trading algorithms versus actual humans and their real-world reactions to the day's news.
That is a great question. A majority of trading in financial markets is done by computers nowadays. So they just take, they process data based on changes in prices and make decisions based on those changes. So when you have a bunch of computers making those decisions instead of humans, you can amplify whatever trend is going on. So if prices are going down, these computer algorithms say, sell stocks before prices go down even more. And as that trend continues, and then the computer gets new information saying prices are going down faster, they try to sell more, and that leads to, a much bigger downturn than you would expect if it was just humans trading on fundamentals. The same thing happens on the upturn.
And while we're on the subject, Aaron, not to put you on the spot, there are those of us who, are of an older age and other people of a younger age who have 401ks. The question, of course, is stick with it or stick with what we got or make changes and risk, missing the wave.
Or buy a new mattress.
Or a safe.
Yes.
I am not a certified financial advisor. My Vox Pop partner, Hugh Johnson, would probably be a much better person to consult on this. But, it's really tough to predict where the stock market's going. For people that are close to retirement age, you should be pretty much out of the stock market and in other safer assets. If you're not, that's going to affect your ability to retire when you had planned. And I feel bad saying this, but, all bets are off nowadays. For younger people like myself, kind of riding this out and waiting for the market to bottom out and then pumping as much money in as possible when it bottoms out, you can ride that wave upward because you have more where you retire. So it really depends on how much risk you're willing to bear and how you're currently invested, and that varies from individual to individual.
Let's a couple more letters for you, Aaron, and then we'll turn to Judith, and then we'll go to general questions here. We hear from Terry, who says, Aaron, what about months of debt relief across the economy if the Fed is the backstop relieve individuals, business, and government from debt payments?
Well, the Fed needs to be authorized by the Treasury Department to make non-traditional loans. And that's what's happened with the Fed providing loan guarantees and access to credit for private businesses as opposed to banks. Short of approval by Congress and the Treasury Department, I don't think the Fed could authorize debt relief for individuals. Just based on the Federal Reserve Act, which is extremely limiting in its scope about what the Fed can do. So the Fed takes care of the banking and business side. What needs to happen in terms of the household side with debt relief, income support, and everything else has to come from Congress.
All right. And there is a rather I'm going to try to do my best here in asking this question from John. So $1,200 going to every adult. Let's see. There are give and take 330 million people total. So if you gave $1,200 to adults and non-adults, that would be $396 billion. $500 billion for the 1%, $396 for the other 99% of us. So where's the other $1.1 trillion going?
All right. So the first thing to understand is that these stimulus check, the $1,200 checks only go to individuals who earn, I think it was up to 50,000 and then start sliding down at 75,000 and then entirely phase out at 98,000 per individual. So these $1,200 checks are not going to the entire country. They're going to essentially individuals who earn less than 100 and, or I'm sorry, they're going to going to individuals who earn less than 99,000 a year and going less to couples who earn, or going to couples who earn less than 198,000 a year. So if you make $100,000 or more as a single taxpayer, or you know, $200,000 as a couple, you will not be getting a stimulus check. So where that's going is to loans to businesses, loans to small businesses, aid to states, unemployment insurance, assistance to airlines, tax deferrals, public transit, hospitals, and so on.
All right. Aaron, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's see. More letters. Freda says, how about we use the term elders instead of the elderly? An elder sounds like an esteemed and wise person, but the elderly sounds like people who are frail and incompetent and in need of support from others. Karen says, I listened to Bill Gates being interviewed by Anderson Cooper last night, which I did too. It was really fascinating. It was very sobering to listen to this man who knows so much about global pandemics. I recommend it highly. My husband and I were moved to talk about our future realistically for the first time since the virus started spreading. Thanks for all you do. And we thank you, Karen. Suzanne says, of right now, when does the current New York State coronavirus lockdown extend to? Is there a good website with a calendar to keep on this aspect of the virus? Thank you for all your year-round roundtable broadcasts. And I would think, unless anybody else has anything on this, the governor's website and the state of New York website have a ton of information on them. And if you just go to the governor's website, it will probably give you, there is a calendar and has all the dates spelled out there from all the various departments. And I have found it to be a really good resource, so hopefully you will as well. Let's see. Joe says, we've been giving a myriad of protocols we are to follow so as not to spread the virus. We're supposed to remain 6 feet apart, even on public transportation. Should we stop sharing a bed with our spouse? Isn't that a risk? Do I need to sleep on the couch? I don't think so, right?
No.
Has anyone said that? I don't think so.
I mean, as long as the person you're with
like wants you there, right?
And is not infected.
Right. Yes,
as long as they're not sick.
And, yeah, right. Sure, is symptom free and not infected.
Well, that goes back to college. Tell, doesn't it? Kim says, did anyone else get the postcard that reads President Trump's coronavirus guidelines for America? I know I did.
What a waste of postage.
If you feel sick, stay home. Really? How much did that cost? I want to mark it return to center with a few choice words attached, says Kim. We go to James. The greatest threat we face in dealing with the virus is the incompetent and erratic Trump. Somehow he must be sidelined and kept as president in name only. I know it's unlikely, but one can hope Republicans discover patriotism. I agree with the panel's observations of the psychological effects of the depression, says Khan. My parents, like Alan's, lived through the Depression. He is, of course, older than I. I'll turn 77 tomorrow. Wasting food or whatever was not allowed. I'm already noticing a big change at Big Y. The empty calorie shelves, chips, etc., are full. The frozen veggie shelves, for example, are bare by 7:30 in the morning. The psychology of what people don't want in a grocery store is fascinating. I've just been scanning the aisles to see what people aren't buying, and it really is interesting. Also, we go to Amy, who says, please, if you're going to come upstate to if you're going to come upstate to self-isolate, bring your supplies with you. Don't descend on the local supermarket and take supplies away from the people who live here all the time. Linda says, how are Hudson Valley people able to drive back and forth to Florida? The snowbirds. What about the hotels being closed along the way? A good question. I think you have to figure that one out as you're making your plans of driving back. Jonathan says, how can it be that the richest country in the world with a fraction of the population of China has more COVID cases? Meanwhile, our so-called president continues to minimize the problem. Anybody want to take that?
Well, it's because it's Trump. Go ahead, Ellen.
No, you.
thinks it's because it's Trump. I mean, he's so clueless and incompetent, and it continues. I mean, not only did we lose valuable time right when we learned about what was happening in China, the president went out of his way to downplay these risks. But as recently as last night, the president called into Fox News and was on Hannity's show, and the all-important topic of ventilators came up. The New York Times has a story today that GM and another company said they were going to do a joint venture and produce 80,000 ventilators. And the White House has second thoughts because of the $1 billion price tag. I mean, this is when we're passing a $2 trillion spending bill. But last night, Trump said on Hannity, quote, "I don't believe you need 40,000 or 30,000 ventilators. You go into major hospitals sometimes and they have two ventilators. And now all of a sudden, they're saying, can we order 30,000 ventilators? Emphasis on all of a sudden. I mean, the sheer incompetence continues to this very moment. And the whole notion that we have to reopen the country to help the economy, and not recognizing that the only way the economy will recover is when the illness, the rate of illness is dramatically reduced. He still just doesn't get it.
I agree.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I think that he lives in his own narrow path, doesn't he? I don't know whether it's incompetent, but he lives in a black and white world, walking down his own path with no gray, no room for anything else. And that's exactly what's showing up right now. He can't adjust for what's happening because he only walks down his narrow path. There's no other way but Trump.
But Kate, what is that path? What determines that path? It's actually self-interest. He He absolutely believes that the key to his re-election is to do this obnoxious stuff that he does virtually every day, and that his 30% or 35% or 40% eat it up. They love it, and he's not going to stop doing that. For us to say, well, doesn't he recognize the science and all of this? It's just utter nonsense. He only recognizes what's going to get him reelected, or he thinks is going to get him reelected. Yeah. I don't.
This question for Kate from Bob, who says, how are decisions made on when events can start up again when we're getting so much contradictory information? And how in the world can you make a plan for the future when it could be anywhere from Easter to next year?
Thank you, Bob. It is an incredible dilemma. I've spent a lot of time over the past 2 weeks simply looking at the curve, depending on the scientists to look at that curve. I also don't speak about this very often, but my daughter is the deputy mayor of administration in New York City, and as rarely as I speak to her, she is truly on the front lines. I have been able to gather some information from her, which is letting me know in some way, in any way that any of us can know, what the duration may be and the worst possible case. The other worst possible case, of course, is that this all comes back in the fall. So we may have an August, but are we going to have an October and November?
We have another question from Kyle, who wonders about what impact this will have on ticket prices. And he says, will prices have to go down because people will have less income? And what does that mean for the performers?
I'm sorry, Kate, you next. I just was going to say it may not mean that it's going to go down because for any other reason, except they want to get bodies in the seats, and that's the way you do it. I'm sorry, Kate, go ahead.
Well, I think all of us that work in the not-for-profit world know that it's important to get everybody into the theater that we can. So no matter what is going on in the world, there are always seats set aside thanks to generous donors or just thanks to our own desire to make sure that we have diversity in our theater and that people that want to walk into that theater that can't afford get to walk in. So that will continue.
Anne asks perhaps my favorite question that we've gotten. Kate, I will direct it to you. What impact do you think this will have, this coronavirus pandemic, will have on the product? Well, there's one of these letters without a verb. I apologize. What impact do you believe that this coronavirus pandemic will have on the art that is being created right now?
I spoke with several of our artists yesterday, and the common thread was there's no theater being created right now except in our living rooms by ourselves. And so I assume that what will come out of this will be works about isolation, but also work about hope and the human spirit recovering from this. I'm sure that each one of you has already started to hear of folks that are passing away from this disease. And what is that going to look like on a mass scale? What is the grieving period going to produce for the artist? I don't know, but I'm sure some extraordinary work.
Thank you very much, and thanks to Anne for the letter. Going back to Judith, as a farmer, Nate writes, who cares for the land while producing safe, nutritious food, I'm deeply concerned about relaxation and any current environmental standards. I cannot, however, allow one of your roundtable participants' statement that this will result in more pesticides in our food to go by unchallenged. The safety of our food isn't the jurisdiction of the EPA, and quite frankly, when we are currently in a state of unease about the spread of false information, you are doing your audience a huge disservice by spreading the same unsubstantiated information that you are critiquing in others.
So the EPA does play a vital role on pesticides. They are the agency that approves, that gives waivers. It is the Nate is true that the FDA and USDA also play a major role, but so does the EPA. And if people are concerned about pesticides, this is a great time to be buying organic, as long as you can trust that it is being labeled properly.
We also got this letter, and Aaron, this one for you, I believe, which is, oh, I just lost it. Darn it. Oh, I haven't heard anything about a reduction in credit card interest. My home equity line rate dropped after the Fed's drop, but not the 16% on my Amex card. Others pay much more.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't refinance credit card debt as easily as you can refinance mortgage rates, primarily because of the importance of the housing market. I don't expect debt relief for credit cards to be part of any stimulus package.
Sounds like it makes sense. We got this letter from Jim, says, Alan, what happens if the extra people overrun the smaller hospitals in the rural areas? I do love my friends from downstate, but it does worry me.
Well, you know, this is exactly the kind of thing that I'm very alarmed about, this kind of jingoistic us versus them stuff. We've got to put a stop to that. We're better than that, and I want to make sure that we reach up and we try our best. I know Kate and I are doing that in the Berkshires. We've just got to do better than that kind of stuff.
Bob,
I resent it a lot. I really do.
Bob writes to us and says, economies recover, dead people don't. We also got this note from Nicholas, who said, I love your response and any clarifications regarding Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's comments that his state has been outbid repeatedly for personal protective equipment by none other than the federal government. Is this happening in other states? It's a great question.
Yes, it is. All the governors, virtually all of the governors, not all, are speaking out. And I think every show we need to talk about the Defense Production Act. It sounds like this wonky inside the beltway discussion, but when the president said he's not the country's shipping clerk, he was absolutely wrong. That is what the federal government typically does in emergencies, is procure large amounts of equipment as low a price as they try to get, and then they disperse it where emergencies exist. And so, I mean, Trump's technically signed the Defense Production Act, which enhances the purchasing power of the federal government, but he hasn't used it. And it continues to be a major problem, despite policy leaders saying there are enough masks, for instance. Let's use a simple example. Ventilators, right. Harder. Masks. There's an article in the Albany Times Union this morning chronicling how visiting nurses, these are the nurses who enter the homes of elders, people having chemotherapy, people who just got out of the hospital, visiting nurses in the capital region don't have masks. So they enter homes of people who have health problems, and they potentially will be spreading the disease themselves, or they will be picking it up. And it's just a recipe for disaster. I understand that hospitals are the top priority, but today, March 27th, in the Capital District, visiting nurses are not wearing masks because their management is working hard to get them and they are not available. The Defense Production Act would take care of something like that.
There's a lot of heavy stuff that we've been talking about over the last hour, hour and a half. Kate, I know you, I'm hoping you have something for us that can help us as we go into a break of just a palate cleanser, if you will.
Oh, thank you, Joe. You know, I think of the folks that you were just talking about, Judith, and all those that are on the front lines, and we are lucky. We are very fortunate to have WAMC to keep us connected. And I'm thinking of all of those that are leaving their loved ones at hospitals that can't see them. Mm. I'm thinking of my dear friend, Marion, who's alone right now. And perhaps William Shakespeare, who watched the world in front of him, said it best in Sonnet 29. When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy contented least. Yet in these thoughts, myself almost despising, happily I think on thee, and then my state, like to the lark at break of day arising from sullen earth, sings hymns at heaven's gate. For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings that then I scorn to change my state with kings.
Kate McGuire, Artistic Director and CEO of the Berkshire Theater Group, reading from William Shakespeare. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Our last 15 minutes together this morning. Alan Shartok, Judith Enk, Kate McGuire, and Aaron Pacitti. And Kate, that was a beautiful reading. Thank you so much for doing that before the break. Wonderful way to take a pause. I appreciate it very much. We have a lot of letters. I want to get to those, and we welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. I just want to remind you that coming up at 11:30 this morning, we do have a briefing from the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. It's expected to be taking place somewhere around, they were saying approximately 11:30, so we will go to that when it happens, taking place at the Javits Center in downtown Manhattan. That coming up at 11:30-ish. We go to letters now, and this one from Don, who says, if Alan is convinced that the pandemic is the end of Trump, how does he explain his overall approval ratings going up? Alan?
Not hard. The fact is that people really do need some reassurance. He's the president, and he puts himself up there every day and does his thing. So, you know, people are scared. They're scared to death, and that's what this is about. Joe, if I may, I just got a note from somebody who said, I listened to Alan's interview with Governor Cuomo yesterday. I've been following Governor Cuomo from the inception of this journey from my border town of Sharon, Connecticut. I've been impressed on many levels, but mostly from the perspective of a retired nurse with infection prevention and control experience. 3 weeks ago, I quietly said to a friend, I think we have the next Democratic presidential candidate for 2024. Since then, I've seen the conversation begin to merge on Facebook, supporting my thoughts. During the interview with Alan, there was conversation regarding Governor Cuomo being the vice president on the 2020 Democratic ticket. His talents and abilities are much larger than that. He has provided the template and role model for what presidential leadership during a pandemic should be. Perhaps the conversation should shift to Governor Andrew Cuomo as the 2024 Democratic candidate. Well, 2024 is a long way off, right? But here's what I think. I think if, in fact, Biden sees what's happening with Cuomo, respects your knowledge of what he's doing, Ryder, and says, okay, I know I said it's going to be a woman, but I think in this case we're in such bad shape, it should be Cuomo. When I asked Cuomo about that in the interview yesterday, he said absolutely not. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be vice president. He wants to be governor. Nevertheless, you know, this is a time when strange and dramatic things have to happen. That's for sure.
Do you think when I was listening to the interview, I wondered also, Alan, if, yes, I agree, he probably doesn't want to be vice president. He wants to be governor. But would he rather be president than governor? You know what I mean? I mean, like, not want that role.
The way to the presidency is through the vice presidency for Cuomo. There are too many delegates who have been chosen. Now, Biden, if Biden wasn't well, for example, he could turn around, he could release his delegates and say, I hope you all vote for Andrew Cuomo, because they are friends and because they are colleagues. That's a possibility that could happen. Otherwise, Biden is an older man. Cuomo is a relatively younger man. But let me tell you, I've often used the analogy about somebody who wants to go to the prom is waiting for somebody else to invite them. I'm leaving this gender free if I can. I'm not going to say I would go with you until you invite me. Otherwise, I really sort of damage myself. And I think that's what's going on.
All right.
Well, remember all the proms are canceled this year. And secondly,
very helpful.
There are no proms. Go ahead.
And second, remember at one point in the campaign, Joe Biden said if elected, he planned on serving just one term. So that might open the door.
I did not remember that, and if he said it, it was stupid. Because people do not want somebody who basically cuts themselves off and says, you know, because the moment somebody becomes a lame duck, that's what they are, a lame duck.
I know. Well, he said it when he was way behind in the polls.
Right.
I don't know if he will honor that public pledge that he made, but I sure hope he honors the public pledge of selecting a competent, experienced woman for vice president, because there are many to choose from.
I got it. I hear you.
We go to Ryan. Judith, this for you. Don't listen to big plastics. The virus lives up to 4 days on hard surfaces such as plastic and much less time on absorbent surfaces such as cardboard, and I would assume paper and cloth. If people simply wait 5 days between uses of bags, it'll be fine. The bigger risk is the person who picks up the bag and hands it to the bagger, or the bagger who hands it back to the customer. Bag your own groceries, sanitize when you enter and leave a store, and don't touch your face. Use common sense, people.
And don't put any reusable bag on your face. It was a joke.
I got it.
I was wondering what was going on at your house, Judith. Thank you.
Come on, guys. It was such a long pause. I know it wasn't a good joke.
That was good. That was good.
All right.
Good.
Oh, I like this one. So Judith says, can you please address the origins of zoonotic diseases like COVID-19, bird flu, SARS, and others that come from eating animals and factory farming? I'm hoping that the human race will wake up and realize that we're destroying ourselves and our planet by these choices. We had an interview with the science writer David Quammen yesterday, who wrote a book many, many years ago called Spillover. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that when this happens, when this consumption begins, this is the spillover where the virus then enters into humans and then can be passed on. It was a fascinating discussion. So Nancy's question is a good one about the origins, and people, if they want to hear it, we went into great detail yesterday on with David Quammen, and that's available online. But what do you think about that, Judith, about because this is an environmental question as well?
Yeah, so the origins, they think, but they're not sure, of this virus happened at a wet market where it skipped into a species. I think this is worth, you know, close examination. I'm not at all convinced it's linked to factory farming practices. And I think we just have to wait for the science on this.
One of the things that we were in this interview yesterday was they were going back to 2010 of where this was on the radar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm, yeah.
shows you just how long it can take, but then once it happens, how quick it can break out.
Right, absolutely.
I don't think we should forget, right, that there have been a number of illnesses that have come from vegetables being incorrectly fertilized or otherwise. That's important, too, for those people who think, you know, that vegetarianism, which I have great respect for, is the only answer.
Well, I don't think that's comparable, though, Alan, with all due respect.
No, it's not. It's not the coronavirus, that's for sure, but it was a lot of people getting sick, that's for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, there are environmental reasons, aside from the pandemic. It's like when Ray did the news. Aside from the pandemic, it's going to be a lovely day in upstate New York. But aside from the pandemic, the climate change impacts of meat consumption have been very well documented. I don't think this is a time, you know, for people to be shamed for consuming meat or poultry or fish. But I do think it's a time to remind people that if, you know, we still have a climate crisis on our hands, and everything we were doing a few months ago to drive down carbon emissions is just as important today. And it's, you know, read up on your diet and climate change. And if you currently eat meat, you know, it's hard to get it. So maybe you reduce it to a few times a week.
Did you, any more,
no,
Alan?
I was just going to say, so Judith, I think you sort of answered my next question, which was, do you eat meat? By saying
sometimes
maybe reduce it to a few times a week. That's why I shut up.
Okay. We go, let's see, to Billy, who has a nice letter. This is just a nice thing, who says, you guys totally rock when all hell breaks loose. We know that the WAMC panel will continue on. Your expertise, your perspectives, your dedication and perseverance are all very much appreciated. I have many other thoughts and opinions, of course, these days and all days, but I thought that that one was the most important to express this morning. And we thank you, Billy, very much for doing that. Very nice to hear. We appreciate it. Also, Brucey says, I think Trump wants governors fighting with each other over resources. He thinks it's better for him, a major distraction from his failures. Dan says, it is killing me that I can't go to the theater. I can't go to Broadway. I can't see my local productions. Kate, what plays can I read?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You should start. I mean, you could start with The Bard. You could look at some contemporary American works. I just read this really interesting play, if you can get your hand on it, called The Wolves by Sarah Delape. I'm not even sure how to pronounce her name.
The Wolves?
It's a brand new play, The Wolves, and it's about a woman's soccer team. It's interesting because it's written by a woman.
I'm sorry, soccer or stalker? I apologize. Which?
Soccer.
Okay.
Soccer team. And it just hits on so many notes. So that's kind of fun. Or, you know, you can pull up musicals online and watch them if you like musicals. But maybe we don't want to go to plays that were written about the Great Depression right now. I don't know.
Do you want to wallow in it or do you want an escape?
Yeah, we're doing a play this fall called And a Nightingale Sang by C.P. Taylor. It's a wonderful read, a wonderful play, and about a family during World War II, and essentially just recognizing that at the heart of everything are our families and how much we care for each other. A very warm piece. So I encourage you to go to read one of the plays that we'll be doing later in the year.
Very I would funny. Just point out that Gunsmoke is still on television.
That's right.
So are the Golden Girls.
Yeah, if you want to read Gunsmoke scripts, for God's sakes.
That's when you know everyone's going to, is really desperate. They're at the end of their rope. Hey, honey, let's watch some Gunsmoke.
Oh, wait a second.
Just caused a world war. All right. This one is for both Judith and Aaron. Aaron, I'll let you go first on it. Speaking of massive stimulus and an actual real-time near-complete arrest of the current petroleum-dependent global economy, this is a long one. How about a Green New Deal? Infrastructure, jobs, renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, climate science, carbon sequestration, and ecosystem restoration. Aaron, you first.
Yeah, so the way to think about this is you do the triage first, and that's just, you know, stop the bleeding, stabilize the patient, and I think that's what the first round of stimulus looks like. But we're going to be – policymakers need to think about the next 5 years and the next 10 years in terms of how we recover from such a massive recession. And the Green New Deal is a very logical place to start, and I hope we have politicians who are – willing to muster the resources and put aside ideological differences to tackle that.
Judith.
Yeah, I think this crisis reminds us that we live in an interconnected world. And I don't mean that in a John Muir kind of way. I mean it in a fossil fuel economy kind of way. And if we can get off fossil fuels in New York State, for instance, our indigenous energy sources are wind, water, sun, geothermal. If we can get off fossil fuels as soon as humanly possible, that will give us greater economic stability and better health and a real hope for the future, something that I think a lot of young people are starting to wonder about. What does their future hold? And this is a good time to be reading FDR, the New Deal. We now need the Green New Deal on a bunch of levels. The only interest that I think would vigorously fight this, and they are still influential, is the fossil fuel industry.
We have just about a minute, and I'll try to get in as many questions as I can here in that minute. Taylor says, I'm genuinely curious why the press doesn't challenge the president more in his dangerous, false, and misleading claims during his daily press briefings. He is essentially using these as daily mini campaign rallies. We heard the term Sleepy Joe yesterday during the press briefing. These are boosting his approval ratings. Also, if Pence is leading the coronavirus task force, why is it even necessary to hear from Trump at all? Well, I think we know the answer to
that. He misses his rallies. He doesn't seem to have deep personal connections in his life with his family or friends. This is the way he acts out. And him speaking at these news conferences, I think, often makes the situation worse rather than better. And I agree with the letter writer. I think the reporters need to cover him differently. They need to do real-time fact-checking. And when Trump very rudely attacks one of the reporters, calling them nasty, it's 9 times out of 10, he reserves that for women reporters. The next reporter has to back up the person before them and say, no, we want an answer to the question. I mean, I know reporters are working really hard. They're under stress. I don't think the White House press corps has been handling this in the way we need them to.
We have this letter from Robert, and we only have just about a minute, so I'll do it real quick. But unpopular opinion, Cuomo is doing a great job with the pandemic, but he's also simply doing what any leader should be doing. Our bar has fallen so low with Trump that we are surprised when a leader does their job and responds appropriately to a crisis.
Alan, well, I could not disagree with that more. You know, there are a lot of governors. They're doing their things, but this guy has really gotten the rapt attention of the American people. I just don't think this is one man just doing his job.
And Nan agrees with you and says, with all the crushing on Governor Cuomo, and I'm among them, I can't help but remember when everybody loved Rudy Giuliani. Which is also a very good point.
You bet. You bet.
Yeah.
All right. We'll end it there this morning. I thank our panel. You're also wonderful. Judith, Kate McGuire, Aaron Pasitti, thank you so much. Wonderful to have you. Alan, have a beautiful weekend as well. We'll be back on Monday.